To WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of this Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
The big money corruption of American politics will be on display at the national conventions of the Republican and Democratic parties this summer. But you can't see it without a ticket. A very pricey ticket. While both parties will portray themselves as heroic leaders for us common folk, and while the media establishment and its pundits will stay focused on their predictable speeches, politicking, and pageantry inside the hall, the real story will be taking place at high-dollar, invitation-only events inside exclusive clubs, restaurants, and other hideaways of the elite. It's in these places, behind the velvet ropes that screen out all of us common folk, that you can see political and money power ooze, schmooze, and merge into one. For example, maybe you've wondered why the banking laws of our great democracy are written in such a way that allow bankers to rob you and me. Such daylight robberies as their endless and always rising fees, so-called privacy provisions that let them sell our personal financial information, etc., etc. It will all come clear to you if you go to the Swank Rainbow Room in Manhattan on the night of August 30th, the opening day of the Republican National Convention. There you'll see Representative Michael Oxley, chairman of the Financial Services Committee that supposedly oversees the banking industry. He'll be the guest of honor at a party paid for by J.P. Morgan Chase, Credit Suisse First Boston, and the other big banks that profit enormously from Chairman Oxley's willingness to legalize their robbery. Banks that currently have bills before him to allow even more robbery. The banks are paying up to $100,000 each in tribute to the guy who writes the banking laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, why won't even one network break away from the convention hall to cover this telling political event? Like at the Academy Awards, they could call out the names of the politicians and banking moguls as they pull up at the Rainbow Room in their limousines. Now that would be good TV.
CNN is at the Republican Convention right now.
We have a ringside seat.
Live from New York's Madison Square Garden.
We're getting inundated with the confetti now.
Trust CNN for the convention's big stories.
There's a lot of buzz today.
And big speeches as they happen.
He electrified this convention.
Don't miss the Republican National Convention.
I proudly accept your nomination.
A live primetime event tonight, 7 Eastern on CNN, America's convention headquarters.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we survived. Welcome back, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. In fact, an old friend of ours, Richard Silberstein, a professor from Melbourne, Australia, visiting today, who often listens to the program on radiopower.org on the internet in Australia. It's wonderful to have Richard here visiting. And just one more reminder, like the phone call we got yesterday from Qatar. I mean, it is broadcasting from the RNC, and we had a listener in the Middle East calling up and talking about this. What a week. Those of you who've been listening to the program, the last 3 days we were broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention. Many interesting events. The essential schizophrenia of the Republican Party really came into sharp focus last night with George W. Bush's speech, and I don't mean that in a mean-spirited way, or even to use schizophrenia in the clinical psychopathology context, but rather we don't have a good other word for it, I suppose, that isn't pejorative, you know, flip-flop, boing boing, whatever. But here's the problem that the cons have been facing essentially from the beginning of the so-called Reagan Revolution, when philosophical conservatives, doctrinaire conservatives of the Edmund Burke school. Edmund Burke, you'll recall, is the godfather of the modern, that is, over the last 300 years, conservative movement. Edmund Burke, the British philosopher, who in the 18th century, 1700s, said, It does society no harm for a man to engage in a profession such as being a hairdresser. However, I'm paraphrasing. I don't have the quote right in front of me, but this is within a word or two of it. However, it does violence to society if a person such as this is involved, is allowed to engage in governance, to participate in governance. The idea that there is some fundamental reason why there is this fundamental notion, let's say, that there are classes and orders and there's ruling classes and non-ruling, what John Adams used to refer to, the rabble, right? The rabble. You got to worry about the rabble. Look out for the rabble. And this is, you know, just this consistent thread that's gone through it. So the conservatives came to, you know, for a long, long time, they were standing on the outside. I remember, in fact, yesterday, I believe it was, when I was broadcasting from the RNC, somebody came up and gave me a Goldwater and 64 button. As those of you who listen to the program regularly know, I worked on Goldwater's campaign in 64. I once, you know, I saw the world through that lens of government is the enemy, government is bad, government is, you know, anything government does is ultimately going to be wrong. And I've awakened, let's say, to realize that I really would like to have a fire department that works, a police department that works, roads that work. I really, as the owner of a small business, I really would like to have employees who are well educated in a public school system. As the father of children, I really would like to have my kids growing up in a world that is safe and where the water is pure and the food is clean, and that these are all appropriate functions of government, that there is the commons, there is this thing that we all share collectively. Oh, by the way, before I go, it's Friday, it's the first hour of our Friday program, it's almost always Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie's not going to be with us in our first hour today. A group of folks from Afghanistan have arrived, and he had to go out to the Washington airport and meet their plane. So those of you who are expecting Brunch with Bernie, my apologies. It's the Tom Hartman program, as usual. So anyhow, back to this. So the essential schizophrenia that the Republicans are facing, or at least the conservatives within the Republican Party. See, this wasn't a schizophrenia that Dwight Eisenhower faced. It wasn't a problem that Nelson Rockefeller faced, because they had a philosophy of governance that included the idea that there are appropriate functions for government, that that there is a social contract, and that taxes are the price of admission to a civil society, and that it is inappropriate to borrow money from our children and our grandchildren so that we can create the illusion of prosperity to seize political power. As Ronald Reagan did this year, we will spend $160 billion paying interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in 1980-81, I'm sorry, in 81-82, so that he could create the illusion of prosperity. George Bush is doing the same thing now. And our children and grandchildren are going to have to pay that. And you wonder, you know, gee, there's a drag on the economy. Could it be? Could it be? Could it have something to do with the money that we're having to pay? But in any case, the schizophrenia that I'm referring to is this problem of having been on the outside throwing stones for so long. The conservatives now control essentially all the branches of government, from the Supreme Court, the House, the Senate, the presidency. And so you have this situation now where throughout his speech last night, George Bush kept going back and forth between throwing a sop to the folks who really fundamentally are, a variation on feudalists. Feudalism being one of the three historic forms of tyranny: kingdoms, theocracies, and feudalists. Feudalism is, a good definition, good working definition of feudalism is rule by the rich. In other words, no government, but rule by the rich. The local feudal lords get to make the rules. Those with the money, he with the gold gets to make the rules, the golden rule, all that stuff. Throwing a bone to them, government is evil, small government, we're going to get this. And yet at the same time, having to take these positions that, some folks would even say were, historically might say, were socialist. What's this switch? This is the problem that they're facing. So anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. I want to get into that a little bit more. We've got some new economic statistics. I've got some clips from John Kerry. I want to contrast some of this with Franklin Roosevelt. We're going to hear from him. I've got some more information for you on the Swift boat ads. We've got just a, and I want to get into the ownership society. There's just so much to talk about today. It's going to be a fascinating day. 1-866, our toll free number, 1-866-889-8894, and Kodak in Durham, North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
Good morning, everyone. I'm sorry I have to call so much lately, but I've just been aggravated to no end.
I can imagine.
I've been the better part to talk radio, C-SPAN, and the gamut. My comment was regarding, I heard a lot of people talking about why doesn't John Kerry hit back and hit back hard. And after giving that a considerable amount of thought, I really think that his strategy is one that is pretty good, because regardless of what he says or regardless of what he does, it doesn't seem as if the media is going to give him a fair give him a fair break regarding his point.
Yeah, and Kodak, this is one of the, for example, these Swift boat ads that Laura Bush now, George Bush Sr., and numerous pundits and commentators have essentially come out and said, well, you know, what's wrong with them? The other side has spent tens of millions, $60 million, attacking George W. Bush. Well, the $60 million that has been spent attacking George W. Bush has been factual attacks. You know, hey, he's lost these jobs. He's got this trade policy that's eviscerating the American industry. You know, and on right down the list. We had a caller yesterday. We would be, hey, give me one lie in the Democratic ads against George Bush. There aren't any. They're statements of fact. And yet, for example, the new Swift boat ad that implies that John Kerry was suggesting that all Vietnam veterans had engaged in genocide in Vietnam ignores intentionally the prefatory remarks that he made in 1971. Let me just share this very briefly with you, Kodak, and with our listeners. This was John Kerry in 1971.
Months ago in Detroit, we had an investigation at which over 150 honorably discharged and many very highly decorated veterans testified to war crimes committed in Southeast Asia.
Now, you get this? He starts out, a few months ago in Detroit, we had a hearing, so he's reporting.
Not isolated incidents, but crimes committed on a day-to-day basis with the full awareness of officers at all levels of command.
And then he gets into the comments that are in the ads, but the ads are deceptive. He was exposing this, just like he did with the hearings on BCCI, where he busted open this criminal enterprise, the BCCI bank, that even exposed some members of the Bush family's involvement in it, for which I think they have not forgiven him. One of his big efforts in the Senate. And yes, I think you're right. But he is fighting back now, Kodak. He really is fighting back. I mean, here's how he opened his speech last night.
You're going to be proud of a man who represents working people in America, and he's going to replace the vice president who represents Halliburton and corporate America. We're going to put this man in vice presidency.
Yeah, John Edwards representing working people, Dick Cheney, Halliburton, and corporate America. I mean, this, in many ways, I think we are revisiting the election of 1932. Kodak, your thoughts? If you're still there. Apparently not. 1-866-889-8894. Let's move along. Steve in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I've got a question. I'm talking to a lot of conservatives who pretty much take any criticism of the current administration as something that they can dismiss because there's so much, negative talk out there. So I'm trying to talk to some about the problem with the debt. One thing I don't have is I don't understand. I know that there must be a sincere feeling out there about how the debt is going to be paid off by the neocons.
There isn't.
And, I mean, Greenspan's talking about, as you've mentioned, things like wage inflation and that sort of thing. And I'm looking for sort of a way to express to these people who is targeted to pay off the debt.
Yeah. Well, okay. Actually, there is. It's very straightforward, Steve. And Greenspan has started the discussion. You end Social Security, which they think is socialism. You end Medicare, which they think is socialism. You end the Department of Education and Support for Education in the United States, which they think is socialism. And then you'll have enough money to pay off the debt. Steve, we got to go. We'll be back after this break. 20 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got?
Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
It's Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kibble and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man, tonight at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E.
She's the one, the chosen.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 minutes, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. You know, the Steve's call from Santa Fe, this illustrates the essential problem that conservatives in government are facing right now, and that is that they have the reins of power, they have the tools of governance, and they must develop now a philosophy. I mean, they've always a philosophy of governance. They've always had this anti-philosophy, this philosophy of anti-governance, and now they're in charge, and they're discovering, hey, the people want Social Security. The people would like medical care. The people want the potholes to be filled, the streets to work. They want the commons to be clean. We would like our air to be clean. And these are reasonable functions. Not just reasonable functions of government, necessary functions of government, because when you have an institution whose primary purpose is to create a profit, that's a wonderful thing. If you want to make a profit, you know, God bless business. Business has built America in many, many ways. But to say that those whose first goal is to make profit should be responsible for whether or not our air is clear and breathable, or whether our water is pure, that, it just doesn't make any sense. And so the conservatives now are having to come up with a philosophy of governance, and thus the schizophrenia that you heard last night in Bush's speech, where he would go back and forth between, you know, conservative nostrums and then saying, and we're giving more money to education, and we're giving more money, you know, and then at the same time in the background you discover that, well, actually what they did was they cut this program so that they could add to that program, so they could claim they added a program, but in net there was a cut, and I tell you my friends, there is a battle going on right now for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, not unlike the battle that's been going on for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party ever since the rise of the Democratic Leadership Council, the corporatist wing of the DLC, the corporatist wing of the Democratic Party. Anyhow, let's wrap up some of these. Got a few more phone calls here. I got a couple of clips here I want to get to. Kodak got cut off. Kodak, you're back on. Hey, what happened?
Yes, I got cut off for some strange reason. Yeah, my point I wanted to make regarding Kerry's position and campaign position, and as I see it coming to fruition now, is that regardless of what he would have said regarding the negative attacks, he still would have been on the offensive.
So you mean on the defensive?
Out, yeah, on the defense, yes. Yeah. Instead of him coming out strong, I think he decided to wait until they got through the campaign, threw their worst mud at him, and now come out strong.
Yeah.
From this point on, just hammer away. Also, away at against their talking points.
Yeah, you know, essentially that's what Terry McAuliffe told me yesterday when I interviewed him on our program.
Right.
You know, he said, midnight tonight, we're coming out swinging.
Yeah,
and they did.
And it's been proving that the American people hate negative ads. It also says that it reduces voter turnout.
Yeah.
So if those things are true, he's doing correctly by taking it easy. And I think now, as we saw last night, which also was a good plan, we see that not only the end of the convention news was in the front pages, they carries. Hard comeback was in the news.
Yeah, that was very, very well engineered on his part.
Yes.
It was a very well engineered.
And I'd like to pass on some information from an earlier program. For those people that are in swing states, they can get involved. They have an easy way for people to get together and go across to the states that need help in those.
Got to wrap it up quick here, Cody.
Yeah. It's drivingvotesamerica.org, and they help you organize a group to go into the states, into the swing states, and register voters and things along that
okay,
line.
Great. Drivingvotesamerica.org. Thanks a lot, Kodak in Durham, North Carolina. I do appreciate it. Paul in Southern California, Chuck in Los Alamos. Hang on. We'll pick up your calls on the other end of this break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. TomHartman.com. You can drop into our chat room where there's a lively conversation going on.
1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, we've got some new numbers from the government out. Stick around, we'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge. They were busted flat all across America. 362,000 people last week, brand new, showed up in unemployment lines. New claims for unemployment benefits last week, 362,000. The stats are out from the Labor Department, 144,000 jobs created in August. You can bet the administration is going to be saying, ain't that wonderful, 144,000 jobs. They're not going to tell you that we have to create 150,000 jobs every month just to keep up with population growth in the United States. So this is 144,000 jobs is actually a net loss. Again, Not a net loss of jobs, but more unemployed people. So very straightforward, very simple. John Kerry hitting some economic notes here. I just want to share just this little bit here with you.
And now that the president has finally finished his speech, I have five words for America. This is your wake-up call.
And then he goes on to use an old cowboy cliche, an old Texas cliche, you know, the all hat, no cattle, right here. Here it comes.
Let me sum up my response to the president's speech in four words. All hat, no cattle.
But it's getting into the serious. I mean, there are real issues facing us here, and this is important stuff.
4 days in New York. Instead of talking about the real issues that matter to the American people, instead of talking about how we're really going to create jobs, and talking about how we really strengthen our economy, how we're really going to expand health care, bring down gas prices, change the lives of Americans, you know what? They did everything except talk about that. We've had insults. We've had anger from Republicans. And I'll tell you why. It's exactly what John just said. Because they can't come to you and talk to you about having created jobs since they've lost them. They can't come to you and talk to you about creating health care since 5 million Americans have lost it. They can't talk to you about standing up and fighting for the American worker as their own labor secretary talks about exporting jobs overseas. They can't talk about their record because it is a record of failure, and so all they do is attack.
And this is why I say that this campaign reminds me, and I've often thought John Kerry actually may have the potential. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, he's this milquetoast guy, you know. Keep in mind, Franklin Roosevelt, 1932, when he ran against Herbert Hoover, ran on a very, very moderate, very modest platform. 4 years later, in 1936, in July of 1936, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he gave the following speech. He started talking about how economic royalists had arisen in America using tools that the founders never imagined, corporations, the industrial age.
For out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties. New kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things. Through new uses of corporations and banks
there
and securities,
go.
New machinery of industry and agriculture, of labor and capital, all undreamed of by the fathers, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service.
And the essential point that he made, and that people understood back then, was that there could be economic tyranny just like there can be political tyranny. And that economic tyranny is actually the history of the United States, was the rebellion against economic tyranny. The Boston Tea Party was not against England, it was against the East India Company. It was the revolt against a multinational corporation. And as Roosevelt pointed out, he went on to say,
these economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance.
And this is Kerry's point.
And our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
And this was just months after he had signed the Wagner Act, which allowed for unionization. He was in the process of stacking the Supreme Court to reverse the Supreme Court ruling that said that minimum wage laws were unconstitutional and so forth. This is and If the pendulum is swinging back, we will be going back in that direction. And I think it'll be a very healthy thing for the United States. We have seen our economy devastated. We're seeing debt beyond, you know, beyond the vision of the future. How far out? What's it going to take to pay back $7 trillion? Unless we do it the way that the Germans did in the 1920s by inflating our currency beyond recognition, which is not, I think, anything anybody wants. Anyhow, let's go back to our phone lines, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Paul in Southern California, is on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. How are you feeling after being in the belly of the beast?
Energized, actually.
Energized.
You know what was amazing? Did you listen to any of our shows from the...
I got a chance to listen to a few. I remember listening to, I believe it was a representative who was speaking about basically that being able to marry gay and lesbian couples would lead to polygamy and dog ownership.
Right. Yeah. The guy. His anti-gay platform was an anti-bestiality platform. It turned out. And no. What I got out of that event, Paul, because they were just shoveling. I mean, the Republican spinmeisters, the PR people for the Republican Party, were just. There were about 50 talk show hosts there, and with the exception of three or four of us, me, Ed Schultz, Arnie Arneson, and the Air America bunch, all of them were you know, ranged from raving conservatives to foaming at the mouth conservatives, and so they had all these, you know, the real Republican Party was being handed to these folks, and so every 30 minutes I was interviewing somebody else. I had a couple of reasonable people. Spencer Abraham yesterday was pretty reasonable. He seemed like a very decent guy, the Secretary of Energy. But beyond that, the vast majority of them were these doctrinaire. I'm reluctant to even use the word conservative because it's a word that I respect. But they were these doctrinaire something, and none of them could hold together an argument. I mean, once you penetrate the argument two or three levels deep, it just starts disintegrating. So I came back energized. I'm convinced these guys are they're toast. They're hopeless.
Well, just,
they got nothing.
I gotta ask. When you were on the floor, because I'm watching this on PBS, so I have no idea what it is like on the floor, because, of course, things are cut and pasted all over the place.
Yeah.
It felt like I was at a wrestling pay-per-view event. That's what it sounded like with the heckling and everything. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there just going, you know, with what John Kerry just said, with what you just played, you know, that they're so angry and they're so filled with attack.
Oh,
it just seemed like that was pretty much all that was going on, and I'm sitting there listening to the flip-flop chants, I'm thinking to myself, and you know, and you can probably vouch for this, I hope I'm not preaching to the choir here, but as a parent, you know your child. You know your child well. And if your child does not want to go to school, you kind of want to let him go. You kind of don't want to let him go.
Yeah.
And if he says, you know, I've got a real bad stomach ache, and you say, well, yeah, you shouldn't have eaten all the milk duds from before. It's common sense.
Right.
And you kind of go back and forth, should I let them go to school, should I not? And then they come up with other reasons, like people are going to go beat me up if I go to school today. Yeah. Oh, maybe you shouldn't go, maybe you should.
What's your point,
Paul? Of course he's going to flip-flop if you're going to change the logic every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how how you can be an effective parent but let this go on as much as it has.
Yeah, and it's insane. And speaking of parent, Andrew Card yesterday said the President of the United States, George W. Bush, views America. Well, here's his exact quote. It struck me as I was speaking to people in Bangor, Maine, that this president sees America as we think of a 10-year-old child. So, you know, George Bush as parent. Paul, thanks for the call. Where in Southern California are you?
Oh, I'm currently in Pomona.
Pomona. Oh, marvelous place. Paul, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Steve in St. Joseph, Missouri on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? I got to say, since I got the satellite radio, it's good to hear the other side.
Oh, great.
Am I there?
Yeah, you are. You're live and on the air, Steve.
All right, yeah, I'm on a cell phone, so you know how that goes.
Yep. What's up?
The one thing I wanted to ask you about Social Security, and The one thing I hate saying it, but I kind of agree with the other side on, is that I kind of wish I could, because if I'm correct, they take, what, 7.5% of our income for Social Security?
Yeah, plus your employer matches it.
Okay, all right. And my point is that what I'm doing is I save up money at the end of the year, and then me and the wife go out and find small parcels of land for sale, and we buy those, and that's what we're trying to do to invest in our future.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you. And how do you think if I could be able to take some of that money I put into Social Security and match the money I save and then go out and buy land?
Well, see, here's the thing. Social Security was not created as an investment program. Social Security was created as an insurance program. The way insurance works is, for example, if I bought a life insurance policy, you know, $1 million life insurance policy, I may spend, you know, back when I was in my 20s, it might have cost me $15-$20 a month. You know, now it might cost me $100 a month or whatever.
Yeah.
I haven't priced them recently. But basically, it's a small amount of money compared to that million that's going to come back if I die, right? Or they would come back. And so the whole point of an insurance policy is that you know, basically you're paying into it when you don't need it, and if the time comes, when the time comes that you do need it, then it's available there for you. It's not let's see how much riches we can stash up. It is creating a floor. It's creating a foundation. It's saying this is essentially the social safety net. And I think it's absolutely marvelous that people save money in addition to Social Security. And we have good programs for that. 401Ks, SEPs, IRAs. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that we can save money that are tax-deferred, where the government is encouraging us to, giving us tax breaks to do it. But Social Security itself is a good, solid program. My only problem with Social Security is the regressive nature of the tax. You know, if you make less than $90,000 a year, you're paying that 7.5% all the time.
Yep.
If you make $10 million a year, you only pay that 7.5% on the first $87,000 or $89,000. And after that, you don't pay anything. You don't pay anything more. So right now, the Social Security Trust Fund is solvent for the next 30 years, as it stands. And then it's going to get kind of tight. If they were to say, okay, you pay into it instead of the first $87,000 or $89,000, I forget which it is, but it's a little less than $90,000. Instead of the first $90,000 of your income you pay into it, let's make it the first $150,000 of your income. Now, frankly, in my mind, it should be all of your income, right? Somebody makes, Jack Welch at GE makes $200 million a year. He should pay 7.5% of all of that into Social Security. If that was the case, if we simply eliminated that cap and made the payroll tax a full tax rather than a regressive tax that only hits the middle class and the working poor, and made it that it was a tax that also hit the very wealthy in America, then the Social Security program not only would be fully funded, but it would be fully funded in such a way that retirement could be reasonable and comfortable for those people who played by the rules. The thing that the Bush administration and all these cons consistently overlook is that most of the people in this nation, I mean, you have 35 million working poor out there, people making less than $15,000 a year supporting families, and they are playing by the rules. They're busting their butts 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and there's going to be nothing for them when they retire. Shouldn't we say collectively that if you play by the rules, if you help us build this society that we're all part of, that when you're at the end of your life, it's going to be okay?
Yeah, no, I didn't know that about people over 90,000. And I agree with you on that. If I could just say one other thing real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a truck driver, and I just want to say this. Since Bush has come into office, the price of fuel in the past 4 years has gone anywhere up between 50 cents to 80 cents a gallon.
Yeah, yeah, and the profits of the oil companies are at historic high. They are as high as they were during the robber baron era when John D. Rockefeller was building his empire. I mean, it's been that long since oil companies were showing these kinds of profits. It's absolutely amazing. I got to move along here, Steve. Thanks
thank
for the call.
Thank you, Tom, so much.
Yeah, great to hear from you there in Missouri. Just a quick note here: Rama in the chat room just announced that Bill Clinton is in the hospital for emergency bypass heart surgery. Those of you who are inclined, hold him in light, visualize, say a prayer for him, whatever's your particular. But he's a good guy. I'd say the same thing if it was Bob Dole. But, you know, if that's the case, it sounds like he's got a rough time there. 1-866-889-8894. Let's pick off a couple calls here quickly. Mike in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Mike, you got a hurricane coming at you, don't you?
Don't look good.
Yeah. Well, how come you're still sitting there?
Riding the storm out, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're far enough inland that it's probably not going to be a disaster. So what's up?
It could be. But anyway, I just want to make some comments about some of the guests you had this week.
Sure.
First off, I wish that George Bush's handlers were as decisive as Spencer Abraham's, because they showed some decisiveness when their man was in trouble.
Yeah, as soon as I started asking him the hard questions, the Secret Service guy came up and said he can't talk to you anymore. And then he hung around for 10 minutes talking to Louise because they went to high school together. You know,
weren't worried about scaring the kids off, I guess.
Yeah.
Randy Daniels, I think he was a Secretary Comptroller of State of New York or something like that, showed how out of touch some of them are.
Yeah.
When he said that families don't go into debt because they want to party or live beyond their means. Well, that they only go into debt basically for education or to buy a house.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's never been a consumer.
No, apparently not. Mike, good points. Good points. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Got to go here. 1-866-889-8894. Kate in Arcata. Paul in Chuck Los Alamos. Stick around. I'll be right back.
This is Vionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECOWINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere hit a record high last year, but new records are routine when it comes to CO2. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The Mauna Loa volcano in Hawaii rises more than 2 miles above sea level. Near the top is an observatory where scientists have been recording the makeup of the atmosphere since 1958. Last year, the readings of a common greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, reached record high concentrations. A government scientist who monitors this research says the record is part of a routine. He says levels of CO2 get higher every year, and they won't stop until we cut our use of fossil fuels. Peter Tanz is an atmospheric scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which runs the Mauna Loa Observatory. Tanz says that in all the years since 1958, the carbon dioxide measurements at Mauna Loa have never gone down. They've only gotten higher.
CO2 does increase every year. The bad news is that if we really want to stabilize CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere, we've got to stop emitting CO2. To me, it tells a story about what we ought to be doing, and that is work as hard as we can on alternative fuels.
Carbon dioxide is one of the dominant greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and the growing concentrations of CO2 contribute to ongoing changes in the Earth's climate. The CO2 readings at Mauna Loa are the longest continuous record of the gas made by direct sampling of the atmosphere. Tan says the Hawaiian volcano is an excellent place to measure greenhouse gases. The elevation of the observatory and the nature of the air currents make it ideal for studying the composition of the Earth's atmosphere and the way it's changing. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. One little quick note here from John.
This is the first president in 11 presidents. First president since the Great Depression, since Herbert Hoover, who has lost jobs. And this president, in fact, is quite proud of the fact that not even failure is going to force him to change course.
And see, this is the thing, that, you know, the cons say, government doesn't make jobs, corporations make jobs. No, but government defines the rules of the game of business. And those rules of the game of business are going to decide whether jobs are going to be here or whether they're going to be in China. That's the bottom line. It just ultimately always boils back down to that. 1-866-889-8894. Kate in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Kate, we got a couple of calls in only a few minutes. Real quick, what's up?
Okay, I'll try to say this fast.
Thank you. Bless you.
Talking to the gentleman who had been working with people in the Middle East, and he was a Christian.
Yeah, the Assyrian Christians.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and I thought he had some good points. But one thing he said was that they were dealing with an uneducated, poorly informed populace who were ripe for this fundamentalist message. Well, it occurred to me as you were talking to the people that you interviewed that they were the same kind, uneducated, poorly educated, misinformed, no argument, ripe for simplistic arguments.
Now you're talking about all the Republicans I've been interviewing for the last 3 days.
They don't understand history. They don't understand democracy.
Yeah.
And they're ripe and vulnerable for a parent-child relationship with those in power.
There you go. You're absolutely right, Kate. Well said. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for making that point. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Just real fast. You know, I had always thought that the most problematic guy in the administration was a toss between Ashcroft and Cheney.
Uh-huh.
But after having watched this, I don't even know what you'd call it. I guess they're calling it a convention. It's got to be Karl Rove. I actually have a bunch of people that work around me that are immigrants to the country, and so we invited him over after the Bush talk, and I showed him a tape of Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of Will.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody should see that. Everybody should see that. Yeah, everybody should see that. You can pick that thing up for like 10, 15 bucks on Amazon or rent it from your local video store. And it is absolutely, I mean, that was Hitler's big 1934. It was the Nuremberg rallies.
Chilling. The only difference between that and the Bush thing was they weren't saying Sieg Heil.
Yeah, yeah. But something close. Thanks a lot for the call, Chuck. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. What you're going to be hearing a lot about the ownership society now from the cons. And I got to tell you, I thought we already owned this government. I thought the whole idea that Jefferson and Adams and Washington and all those guys came up with is that you and I own our government, that we already own this society. But no, really what they want is to give it over to the corporations. Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2000.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Walmart has a problem.
For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Walmart has a problem. People all across America are learning that it's a beast of a corporation that, among other things, pays poverty wages, engages in massive sexual discrimination, routinely exploits sweatshop labor, bullies its own suppliers, muscles local competitors out of business, and tries to buy its way into cities that don't want it. So, with its reputation sinking and sales slipping, Walmart is finally taking action. Not to reform itself, of course, but to try to put a thick coat of PR polish over its brutish tactics. A few months ago, it launched a multi-million-dollar advertising blitz to
Republican convention. The past week, they have attacked my patriotism and even my fitness to serve as commander-in-chief. Well, here is my answer to them. I will not have my commitment to defend this country questioned by those who refused to serve when they could have and who misled America into Iraq.
Give him hell, John. He's... See, this is... We have been waiting for this.
The Vice President called me unfit for office last night. Well, I'm going to leave it up to the voters to decide whether five deferments make someone more qualified than two tours of duty.
Yeah, this is amazing. It's just the now, of course, their Kerry is in a way responding to the, you know, I'm a better guy than he is sort of attacks that the Republicans began against him. He had, of course, been holding himself out as a good guy, but it wasn't Kerry who started the stuff that you're going to see. For example, Sunday night on 60 Minutes, the very interesting interview, apparently. I mean, 60 Minutes folks aren't talking about this, but our ear to the ground tells us that this story is coming out about how George W. Bush avoided combat in Vietnam. And anyhow, so here he's responding to the kind of, you know, who's the better person argument, you know, however you want to define that. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free telephone number, 866-889-8894. It's Friday afternoon. Anything you want to talk about, you're welcome to give us a shout. We'll get on the air. We can talk about it. And the website, 1-800, yeah. The website, www.tomhartmann.com, that'll get you to our chat room, which is full of folks. Interesting discussion going on there. The Russian military, Lyndon LaRouche, lots of hostage takers. Bill Clinton's in the hospital. Say a prayer for Bill that he might make it through well.
Anyhow, back to the issues here of the election. This is, I think, one of the most important issues. This from the I believe it was the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. I clipped it out. I clipped it out small enough that I don't have the page number attached to it, but my recollection is I saw it on the front page. The headline, "Likely Vacancies Cast High Court as Issue in Presidential Election." And the authors of this article point out that there hasn't been much discussion about this. And, you know, I find this really interesting that there hasn't been much discussion about it. And Bob Davis and Robert Greenberger of the Wall Street Journal made essentially the same point that I've made before here on this program, and that is that the base, the Republican base and the Democratic base, are very concerned about the Supreme Court. This, frankly, in my opinion, is the biggest issue in this campaign, in this election. And that is who's going to appoint 3 or 4 members to the Supreme Court, which is what's going to happen over the next 4 years. Because look at how the Supreme Court has changed the face of America. The 1978 case, Boston versus First National Bank of First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti, the Attorney General of Massachusetts, where Massachusetts had a law that said corporations can only give money to political campaigns under very limited circumstances. And on a 5-4 decision, with the conservatives in the ascendancy, the court decided, well, no, corporations have a right to free speech. They're persons, and they should be able to throw money into politics and campaign. And, you know, that kicked the door open, prepared the way for Ronald Reagan and the rise of corporate power in politics in America, the taking over of the American political process by corporate, by economic power, which is... In my opinion, extremely, extremely toxic to democracy. This is, as we mentioned in the last hour, going back to feudalism. I mean, this is absolutely anti-democratic. Well, this was a Supreme Court ruling. It was in 1886 that the Supreme Court ruled that corporations were persons, or at least is alleged to have ruled. And so much of this stuff tracks back to that. These are situations. I mean, you know, the Supreme Court essentially ratified segregation. As we mentioned in the last hour, going back to feudalism. I mean, this is absolutely anti-democratic. Well, this was a Supreme Court ruling. It was in 1886 that the Supreme Court ruled that corporations were persons, or at least is alleged to have ruled. And so much of this stuff tracks back to that. These are situations. I mean, you know, the Supreme Court essentially ratified segregation in 1896 in Plessy versus Ferguson. They reversed that in 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education. In 1873 in Bradwell versus State, the Supreme Court ruled that women don't have access to the Bill of Rights. They don't have rights independent of their husbands or fathers. In 1973 in Roe v. Wade, the court reversed that. The court could reverse Boston versus Bilotti. The court could make it possible for there to be meaningful campaign finance reform. The court could make it possible to get money out of politics and clean up politics. But it's going to take a court that understands the underpinnings of democracy are 0.62%. 0.62 of a percent. Less than 1% of the nation's health care expenditures. And, you know, President Bush in Albuquerque, New Mexico, he says, doctors and hospitals practice what's called defensive medicine in order to protect themselves in a court of law. Fact, the only study ever attaching a price tag to defensive medicine, extra medical tests given to avoid lawsuits, was one conducted by the Bush administration's own Mark McClellan. Okay, the Bush administration itself, and they dismissed the theory. That and another study done by the General Accounting Office just wasn't the case. Too many frivolous lawsuits are being filed by doctors, says George Bush on August 7th, 2002. The fact, frivolous lawsuits have little impact on cases. Most cases that are so-called frivolous never make it to trial. Actually, even cases that are brought, only 5% of them, 5% of all cases that even make it before a jury end up in a claim. If attorneys never filed an unsuccessful lawsuit, the savings would constitute less than 0.1% of national health expenditures. President Bush on July 21st, 2004, he said lawsuits threaten to close the doors of too many small businesses and factories. Fact, well, this doesn't have to do with malpractice, but the insurance industry estimates show that litigation is a $200 billion a year burden on the a $200 billion a year burden on the U.S. economy. Again, George Bush in Kansas City. The reality, Congressional Budget Office says, no way. The number, If attorneys never filed an unsuccessful lawsuit, the savings would constitute less than 0.1% of national health expenditures. President Bush on July 21st, 2004, he said lawsuits threaten to close the doors of too many small businesses and factories. Fact, well, this doesn't have to do with malpractice. But the insurance industry estimates show that litigation is a $200 billion a year burden on the this is the claim. A $200 billion a year burden on the U.S. economy. Again, George Bush in Kansas City. The reality, Congressional Budget Office says, no way. The number has essentially been made up. The fact is that the median jury award for personal injury cases fell 30% in 2002. The median jury verdict award in personal injury cases peaked in the year 2000 at 45,000, went down to 42,945 in 2001, and dropped to $30,000 in 2002. So the issue here with regard to tort reform in general is that what the cons are really saying is corporations, including health insurance corporations, don't want you to have the right to sue if you're harmed. Percentage of doctors who are responsible for the majority of the claims. Let's crack down on incompetent doctors, which is something the AMA doesn't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on that, Bill. Bill, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Ruby in Cleveland, Ohio. Ruby, we got a break coming up real quick. Is it a fast one, or shall we get into it?
I better wait for the break because I like what you said so much. I want to comment on what you said, and then I have a question for you.
Okay. Well, how about the comment first? We got 20 seconds, I think, or 30.
Okay. On your comments on the U.S. Supreme Court justices, I really appreciate those comments because that's one good reason to vote Democratic is to get some more Democrats.
There you go.
Put it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think that that is one issue that should be put before.
I think it's absolutely vital, Ruby. I absolutely agree with you.
And I still have a question.
That's fine. Hang on, and we'll pick up your question on the other side of the break. I'm just going to put you on hold. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
For united we stand, divided we fall. And if our backs should ever be against the wall, we'll be together.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Lawsuits are driving doctors out of business. Let me just wrap this up and then we'll get back to Ruby here. President Bush in Kutztown, Pennsylvania on July 9th of this year. Lawsuits are driving doctors out of business. Here's the fact. Only 2 months before he made that comment, the Allentown Morning Call, this is the newspaper in Allentown, Pennsylvania, reported that the number of doctors in Pennsylvania had increased during the malpractice so-called crisis. In the summer of 2003, the Government Accounting Office, formerly the General Accounting Office, reported that the volume of medical care delivered in Pennsylvania had also increased during the so-called crisis. Statistics from state medical boards in every other so-called crisis state showed the same. Doctors are not being driven from practice. Very simple, very straightforward. That study specifically... quoting from the Chicago Tribune, physician count clouds malpractice argument. State data show increase in doctors, July 16, 2004. You want to track it back. Based on statistics from the United States General Accounting Office, report GAO-03-836. Apparently, George is not reading his own government documents. Anyhow, let's go back to Ruby here. Ruby in Cleveland, Ohio, you had a question.
Yes. I could just listen to you all day because the comments you just made about tort reform and that it's not driving doctors out is just wonderful. I think I'll just sit and listen. The question is,
thank you.
I'm being educated here. The question is, do you not think that President Bush should give an explanation of no weapons of mass destruction really found? I mean, I think all of the American people, even his own party, wish he would come forth and say, okay, we didn't find the weapons, so we didn't, that wasn't exactly the way I planned, but I did find something that was worth defeating.
Well, he has been making that argument. I mean, you're not going to ever find a politician, and I was frankly disappointed in John Kerry for the same reason. When he was asked, you know, under the same circumstances, would he still have voted for the war resolution knowing what he knows now? You're never going to find a politician who, particularly running for very, very high office, who is going to admit to having made a mistake. And the reason why is not because they're all suffering from hubris or because it's, you know, some fatal character flaw. The reason why is because the electorate
will not tolerate politicians who admit mistakes. It's just which doesn't make any sense. I know to you and me, Ruby, we would like our politicians to be able to say, hey, you know, I made a mistake there and I've learned from it and I'm not going to do that again. Yeah, but the reality is that in politics, that's the quickest way to get bounced out of office. So Bush is not going to say that he made a mistake. What he has said, though, is that, well, there weren't weapons, but there were weapon programs. Well, last night, in fact, he was saying there was, you know, we knew that he had a capability, well, or at least he had the intent, and now we're going to go to war against another nation and sacrifice the lives of 1,000 of our soldiers because we're reading minds of foreign leaders, right? But this, you know, the conservative, or the Republican, rather, spin on all this has been, there's been varied, but the bottom line of it all has been he was a bad guy, so we had to take him out.
And, well, you know, the same Senator Kerry probably had the position of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who thought that the party we were fighting in Vietnam was already a democracy, declared a democracy, so they were confused, and therefore they were confused with the leadership. I don't think he was really saying that the soldiers did anything wrong, but that they might have been ordered because of the confusion of fighting the side that was supposed to be a democracy.
Well, you're largely right. I mean, the communists, the Vietnamese were declaring themselves as communists, but we were nonetheless the war crimes that John Kerry exposed in what he called the Winter Soldier hearings. He was doing that in an attempt to say, we are brutalizing not just the people of South Vietnam, but our own soldiers, and that has to stop. Ruby, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Thank you for your comment.
You're welcome. 29 minutes past the hour.
More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. In black. What a painted black. Sorry. I was a DJ when this song came out. I remember I used to love to yell over the roll. Anyway, welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. It's the bottom of the hour in the second hour of our program. Time for a report. On what's up in politics, Washington, perhaps New York City, with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. It was wonderful meeting you this week.
No, it was terrific meeting you.
And we had such a great time on Radio Row, and you and Ellen and all the folks there. I am just so impressed by the quality of the people that you had and the great guests you were able to help us line up and all the help that you provided us, Ken and Greg and everybody. It was wonderful. Thank you.
Well, we thank you. I mean, it was a fantastic experience. It's working with people like you that make it a fantastic experience, really.
Well, that's sweet.
It makes a huge difference.
So what's up in Washington? What's up with politics?
Well, up in Washington, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, there's nobody here. Most people aren't back yet. I mean, I got out of town quick, so I'm back.
Uh-huh.
And people are, you know, they're not quite ready to come back from Labor Day yet, when they will all come back. And it'll get really crazy as we get into this last brief session before everybody goes home to start campaigning.
Is Labor Day this weekend?
Yeah, it's Monday.
It is. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't... Whoa! I don't keep.
Whoa.
I can't, yeah, that was my fault.
Is that a punishment?
No, I think every now and then, you know, John Ashcroft sneaks in and fiddles with our phone wires. It's
scary. I get this weird clicks on the phone sometimes, and I know it's him.
Yeah. You just say hi, John, and just keep on going. You know.
Yeah. Hi, John. Here's a newspaper to read.
Yeah. But I have a lousy time keeping track of holidays because I we do this show on Christmas, we do it on Thanksgiving, we do it on 5 days a week. That's what you do in radio.
Well, it is. So. It is. And this is one of the, this is probably the first radio situation I've ever been in where, by and large, we don't work because this really is a company town.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to do. But people are very much reacting to Bush's speech last night. And I can tell you, having spoken to a number of, by and large, Republican talk show hosts who probably would call themselves conservative, which they may or may not be during the day, that they're all running out saying that they're going to vote for George Bush and that it was such a great speech and this is what it's all about and what a wonderful convention. And if I sort of say anything about the hatefulness of Zell Miller or the nastiness and the twistedness and untruths that Cheney spoke, I am basically attacked.
Yeah, well, now here's the thing that confuses me. George W. Bush, in his speech last night, kept going back and forth between, at least when it came to his issues of governance, between the pseudo-conservative position that government is bad and we need to turn things over to corporations or simply, you know, let people, give people the freedom to be on their own, right? The ownership society. You think you worked all your life for Social Security, tough luck, you know, that stuff. And then at the same time, almost the same breath, sometimes in the same sentence, he would say, and we're adding another $100 billion to this program, or another $35 million for education. And it was like,
I just had to, I just had this vision of William F. Buckley getting whiplash.
I can understand it. It was quite extraordinary because we weren't told how we were going to pay for anything.
And he was offering all these programs that had he not been in power, had John Kerry been giving that speech, the conservatives would have been standing on the sidelines going, "What? He's a socialist!"
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting how labels are only labels anymore if they're if they're saying what you want them to say.
Yeah. So, in other words, the conservative talk shows that you've been on loved what he said, and they're not concerned about the fact that he's talking about driving up spending and having a huge debt. That's fine with them. They're not really concerned
with them because all the answer you get then is to basically they try and turn it around and talk about how the Democrats do that and how the Great Society wasn't that great.
Yeah.
I actually heard that today.
Well, the Great Society had its flaws, but the reality is that we lifted a lot of people out of really, really miserable poverty. We had a situation in the United States in the 60s that Bobby Kennedy saw up close and personal, and I think for the first time in his life realized that it was real and really horrified him, of children going to sleep hungry. I mean, we actually had, and still have actually in the United States, hunger in the United States, and the diseases and problems of third world countries. And many, our infant mortality rate is at the top end of third world countries, at the bottom end of industrialized countries. And the Great Society actually addressed a lot of those issues. It did it in some ways in a very imperfect way, but many of the programs, I think, had great merit. But the cons won't cop to that, will they?
No, apparently not. I'd spent some time during the week with various women who were not registered to vote and who are either head of households or in the age demo that, that everybody wants.
Uh-huh.
And one of them said exactly that. Well, they're talking about all this stuff, but nobody's talking about real people. Have any of them ever been to, to anywhere where people are really poor? And that one woman told me, I have registered to vote and I'm voting. It's the first time in my life. But others told me, I'm so discouraged by what I'm hearing and by the rage here and the hatefulness and people not speaking to anything that concerns me or my children's lives that I can see. No, I'm not voting. And that's that's disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Just a very quick story. That I interviewed a fellow who died last year, but it's for a book that Lamar Waldron and I are writing, which will be out next year, about Jack Kennedy. And we interviewed a guy named Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams, who was the number two commander of the Bay of Pigs invasion. And after the big Bay of Pigs kind of welcome back, Harry led the, organized the thing with Bobby Kennedy to basically bribe Fidel Castro to release the prisoners from the Bay of Pigs. He had to go out and raise a couple $1 million, give it to Fidel. And they had this thing in the Orange Bowl where they welcomed these people back. And Bobby and Harry was Hispanic, and Bobby and Harry and a third guy who is still alive, and I don't want to name him, but who's an African-American and a high officer right now in the National Guard. The three of them at like, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning after this thing in the Orange Bowl, this was 64, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The three of them decided to go get something to eat. And Bobby's just dressed in, the 1964 equivalent of a pair of Dockers and a blue shirt. I mean, none of them are looking, like men of power or anything like that. And Harry is, he's a soldier and the other guy. And they walk into this diner. And as I recall, it was in Orlando. And it's Bobby Kennedy, a Hispanic guy and a black guy. And the waitress points to a sign over the counter that says no N-word allowed, right?
Mm.
And she points to the black guy with him, and she turns to Bobby. She points to the black guy, and she says, "You're going to have to leave."
Wow.
And he says, "Why?" And she says, "We don't serve these, we don't serve these people here." And Bobby says, "I'm the Attorney General of the United States." And she said, "I don't care if you're God, you're going to get the hell out of here." And she kicked them. This waitress kicked Bobby Kennedy out of this restaurant. And Harry told me this story, and he said that was the moment for Bobby. That was that epiphanous moment. He had never experienced discrimination. He had, he'd been raised in this very privileged family, and they walked out of that restaurant. And Bobby, for the next hour, was just raging. And you know, he was in shock. He was in horror. He was in and then of course from 64 to 67 the whole civil rights thing became Bobby's, you know, cause. And because he had seen the light, he had seen it from the other side. I don't think that George W. Bush has ever come close to seeing what it's like to be African-American in the United States and poor, or even white and poor in the United States. I don't think that he's ever come close to that moment of truth. And I don't think that most of the multimillionaires who are around him in his cabinet and whatnot have ever come close to it. Do you have any sense of that?
No, I have no sense of it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No. In other words, you don't think that they have either?
No, I don't think that they have. Or if they have, it's very much a, well, if you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, everything's fine. Getting that some people's bootstraps are so frayed you can't pull yourself up by them, you fall over.
Yeah, and they ignore the fact that Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice both were beneficiaries of affirmative action.
Right.
That's so. Anyhow, we're ranting here, Victoria. I appreciate the news report. Anything else? Any other news stuff that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, President Clinton's going to be having heart surgery.
Yes, we discussed that.
Yeah, that's probably going to be, I would think, you know, our main Washington story over the weekend. Other than reaction to President Bush's speech and really, frankly, Senator Kerry's very lame response to it. Too little, too late.
You thought Kerry's response last night was lame?
I thought that to pick midnight on the acceptance speech night to basically respond to a month of attacks on his Vietnam service was insane. Yeah. I did.
Well, I'll agree with that. And I noticed that all the stories in the paper this morning that talked about Bush's speech also got Kerry's rebuttal in, at least all the ones that I saw here in Vermont.
And that's good.
And so in
Definitely.
That context, it was a master stroke. It's just, like you said, it was too late. It's so much damage has been done. He should have been out there way ahead of this. I agree with you.
You've got to wonder who's giving him advice.
Yeah.
Whether he's listening.
Or if, Rush Limbaugh is right that there really is a conspiracy to prevent the Democrat, you know, to prevent Kerry from being elected so that the vast Hillary machine can run into it.
Wow, can you imagine?
I'm not going to get into that, but yeah. I was tempted to ask Terry McAuliffe that question when he was on my program yesterday, but I didn't have time, and it wouldn't have been appropriate. So, you know, to give him an opportunity to respond to the right-wing conspiracy nuts. But anyhow, Victoria, thank you so much. Talk Radio
thank
News.
You.
It's always great to hear from you, and we will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks very much.
Okay, do good. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go back to the telephone lines. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the phone. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. To go back to the Supreme Court and its importance and them being called activist judges, I thought that was their whole purpose, was to the checks and balances to stop the executive and legislative branch from running roughshod over the rights of the minorities. They're there to protect minority opinions, not there to endorse big business and big government.
Well, I think the point that the cons make in using this word activist judges is that the Supreme Court is the only unelected branch of government. And as such, really is not, if you read the Constitution, you read Federalist Papers and whatnot, everybody was pretty clear. These guys are not supposed to be making law. They interpret law. And there have been many cases where the Supreme Court has essentially made law. The problem that I have is that the cons are absolutely in favor of activist judges who are activist on their side. In other words, they want judges who are going to make law, for example, that the separation between church and state, which is written into our Constitution, isn't actually there. You know, they want judges that are going to actually rewrite the Constitution.
Exactly.
So really, they're just being disingenuous. I mean, I agree broadly with the principle that judges should be interpreting law, not making law. But I think it needs to be applied on both sides. And I don't know of any conservatives who are suggesting that even remotely. So anyhow, that's thanks for the call, Glenn. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bill in Wilmington, Delaware on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Bill?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic here. Hey, Tom, you know, about this physician stuff.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we have, why doesn't the public have a access to a database where they can go and look up and do a background check on any physician when they want to go ahead and use that physician for services?
Yeah, well, the AMA has...
shopping around like you're buying a TV and happen to see one physician make a copay payment, see another physician make a copay make a copayment, therefore and therefore.
Yeah, Bill, there's
Why isn't there a database?
There is.
Set up.
There is. First of all, the AMA has always fought that kind of thing, and there's no government database, to the best of my knowledge, about that. But there are private groups that are doing that, and there's one of them on the Internet, and I frankly don't remember the website. But a friend of mine just had a hip surgery, had a hip replaced, and he pointed me to this website. He shopped doctors in Manhattan by looking at this website, and it had ranked all the doctors, and it taught how many times they've been sued, how many years
really?
They've been... Yeah, the whole
I'm
bit.
I'm surprised.
No, this is a private group, and they're making money by, you know, delivering ads on their website, and they're just compiling databases from the public records of lawsuits and things. So you know, hey, that's the wonders of free enterprise, right? I mean, that's the upside. I do think, however, that government should be playing a role in that part of protecting us should be protecting us from dysfunctional doctors. And to some extent, the government does that, but the AMA has always fought that, you know, that's been one of the problems.
Yeah, I need some help right now myself because I have a herniated disc.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been looking around.
Well, there are websites that rank doctors. It may be that they are more local than national. It may be that my friend in New York had, you know, tapped into one that was just New York doctors. I frankly don't know.
Or
but,
they're not getting that much exposure for some reason or another.
Yeah, but, you know, poke around on Google. If you track it down, call us back and let us all know. We'll pass the word.
Yeah, and I had a question for you, Tom.
Sure.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Now, I'm going to let you know that I'm a right-wing conservative nut.
That's okay.
Okay.
I've been there.
All right.
Done that. Recovered.
I've been there. I like that.
Bill, the music is starting, and I'm not cutting you off because you're a right-wing nut. What I'm going to say is hold. If you can hold over the break, I'll let you say anything you want. Okay.
Sure. All right. I'll make a cup of coffee while I'm holding.
Okay. Stick around. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get to your conservative nut question here. And Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan, also I suspect we'll have time for you as well. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. We're going to catch the folks at WTKG AM 1230 Grand Rapids doing something right on September 17th when I'll be live with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 o'clock. It's at the corner of Knapp and the East Beltline. Drop by early for coffee, donuts, and a chat, and then you can listen to the show. At 4 p.m. right after the show, I'll be heading over to the Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-242-6599.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, all like a James Bond movie. And they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port. But he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it was took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in the high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. www.tomhartman.com, the website, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and we are talking with Bill in Wilmington, Delaware, who has a question.
Yeah.
Or a loaded question. Yes, sir.
I'm getting my coffee and I'm ready.
Okay, go for it.
I went up and did some research before I'm going to go ahead and vote here for the elections. And I went and took the two hot, I think that's really two hot topics in this country that, you know, really has a division point in it that can
those being
divide you between a conservative and a liberal.
Right. Okay? Those being what?
The marriage amendment. And also the partial birth abortion abortion act.
So you think those are more important than whether or not our children are being plunged into debt?
No, I think what's more important than that is our national security.
Okay.
But anyway, then, here's my question.
All right.
On these two acts on the voting records, I looked them up.
Yeah.
And I looked at Kerry's vote, and I looked at Edwards' vote.
Right.
And on both of these acts, they voted not voting. And I thought to myself, as important as these acts are. How come neither one of them made a stand of saying yay or nay?
Well, I think that both of them are clearly on the record as saying that the current laws, which say that if a fetus is not viable, if it cannot exist outside a woman's womb, then abortion is legal. And if a fetus is viable, then it's not legal unless the woman's life is at risk. And not, under this new law, it's still not legal, even if it means the mother's going to die. And that, of course, is being challenged in the Supreme Court. George Bush, on the other hand, in 1978, told the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, back when he was running for Congress, that he favored leaving the decision up to a woman and her doctor on the abortion question. The verbatim quote, I favor leaving that up to the woman and the doctor.
The abortion one and the partial birth are totally different.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody...
The baby's turned around and brought out back.
Sure, yeah, see, and nobody is defending that for nobody. Nobody is that I know of is saying that fetuses should be aborted or viable babies should be aborted unless it means mom's going to die if it's not done. And the cons are saying, hey, even if mom dies, it shouldn't be done. And I think that that's nuts, frankly. We got to go.
Yeah.
Bill, thanks for the call.
It just bothered me that you know, they didn't make a vote on it.
Yeah. Well, see, those issues have been voted on so many times, odds are they did somewhere in there. 2 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live all across the planet. Yesterday, a call from Qatar. Today, a friend who listens in Australia visiting, sitting here with me, Richard Silberstein. Pleased to see you, Dr. Silberstein. And remarkable, remarkable. John Kerry last night. Finally, some say too little, too late. Others would say it's about time. Others would say, hey, finally, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to say about it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. TomHartman.com, the website. You want to drop into the chat room. Lively conversation going on there. It's Friday afternoon. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Happy Friday, whatever's appropriate for you. And anything you want to talk about, give us a shout. You know, we can get into anything. I would like to play this little clip. It's about a minute of, just a little more than a minute, of John Kerry last night responding to Dick Cheney having said in a speech the day before that that John Kerry was unfit to be the commander-in-chief of the United States. John Kerry.
Well, let me tell you in no uncertain terms what makes someone unfit for office and unfit for duty. Misleading our nation into war in Iraq makes you unfit to lead our country. Doing nothing while this nation loses millions of jobs makes you unfit to lead this country.
I think he needs to drink a little more coffee, you know?
Letting
crank it up, John.
45 million Americans go without health care for 4 years makes you unfit to lead this country.
But he's got the issues.
Letting the Saudi royal family control the price of oil for Americans makes you unfit to lead this country.
That's
it. Handing out billions of dollars in contracts without a bid to Halliburton while you're still on the payroll makes you unfit to lead this country.
And Cheney is still on the payroll, deferred compensation.
That, my friends, is the record of George Bush and of Dick Cheney, and that only begins to scratch the surface.
Yeah, from John Kerry's rebuttal last night. Finally taking off the gloves, as the Washington Post noted in this morning's newspaper, back on page A26. Lois Romano and Howard Kurtz. Kerry takes off the gloves. And calls Bush unfit to lead, saying he misled the country on the Iraq war, cited his failed record on jobs, health care, and energy costs. And then goes on, but you heard it here anyway. You heard it right here on this program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Yes, let me wish you a happy Labor Day weekend.
Well, thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond a little bit to that caller from, was it Wilmington, Delaware?
Yeah, Bill in Wilmington.
He mentioned two issues there which supposedly separate conservatives from liberals. Now, I consider myself a liberal, and I am against partial birth abortion or just about any kind of abortion, and I'm also against gay marriage or gay union. So I don't know. You know, it's so easy to pick something that you like as a conservative, I guess, and then assume that all liberals are going to be on the other side of the issue.
Well, but see, that's what the cons have done is over the years is they have painted they've defined the word liberal, you know,
right.
including things like anti-defense, anti-American, the blame America first crowd phrase that Newt brought into the parlance and things like that. I mean, and it's
anti-religious.
Wrong. Yeah.
I believe in God.
Yep.
But the thing of it is that I guess I didn't get the point he was making. If Kerry and Edwards didn't vote on either one of those two issues, how can they be, you know, painted with any kind of a label if they didn't vote on the issues? I mean, I just don't know whether. I mean, it just seems to me the confusion of the right wingers is that they just kind of blindly follow this guy Bush, even though He's led us into a war on false pretenses, and money and blood have been spent. He's spending like a drunken sailor, as the old saying goes. He's got a Republican Congress, so he can't blame it on Congress. He seems to be waffling, he and Cheney both, on this gay issue, which you think that the Republicans would really be incensed about. He's been kind of weak on immigration, and yet they're just going to blindly follow him because I guess he's a good Christian man who doesn't cheat on his wife. Well, you know, I don't think we'd ever find out if he cheated on his wife because the media covers for him so much.
Yeah, I mean, there are the stories about his father having had an affair. But, you know, for example, you mentioned the gay issue. I thought this was the DNC has this on their website. And I am, first of all, I have to say somewhat ambivalent about talking about family members like this in a political context.
Sure.
But it was Dick Cheney who brought it up.
Sure.
So here's the question they ask. Where is Mary Cheney? This is the gay daughter of Dick and Cheney. And they note, last night after her father, Vice President Dick Cheney, concluded his speech, this would have been two nights ago, at the GOP convention, he was joined on stage by his wife, his straight daughter, Elizabeth, her husband, and their children. But where was openly gay daughter Mary?
Maybe she doesn't want to be associated with her dad.
Well, no, she was there in the auditorium. Once on stage, Lynn Cheney offered an answer when she turned to her husband and mouthed, "Mary's up there," pointing to another side of the arena far away from the family. And then Terry McAuliffe says, "President Bush isn't content with just dividing the country along political lines. Now he's dividing families, including the family of his vice president." And we have a situation where Alan Keyes said that Mary Cheney is a hedonist. Pat Robertson agreed, you know, publicly came out and agreed on this. And Mary is the only child. And she's actively campaigning for her father, by the way. She's following him around the campaign and working and campaigning for Dick Cheney.
I just wonder if they understand what the word hedonist means. It means pleasure-seeking. Now,
yeah, literally, yeah.
Well, but it isn't just gay people. I mean, for instance, we have, and I won't mention any names, but you know who they are, talk show hosts, former speakers, who have been married several times and have cheated on their wives. So, you know, and I don't condone homosexuality. I don't condone a lot of sexual sins, but it's interesting how they can pick and choose, you know, that that sexual sin seems to be a worse sin and homosexuality is a worse sin than, you know, heterosexual. I mean, they just pick and choose, and I think they're just kind of preaching to the choir. And, you know, Bush, in some sense, does seem confused because, on the one hand, he wants to talk about being fiscally conservative, but yet he's spending money madly. He talks about being very moral, and yet he and Cheney both seem to be condoning some kind of civil union, so it's just really confusing. And yet the rank-and-file Republicans will just blindly follow along.
Yeah, no, the situation that we have, Rick, is that George Bush has become the flip-flopper-in-chief. I mean, on Social Security, for example, on March 3rd of 2001, he says, "We're going to keep the promise of Social Security and keep the government from raiding the Social Security surplus." And then a year later, the New York Times reports, "The president's new budget uses Social Security surpluses to pay for other programs every year through 2013, ultimately diverting more than $1.4 trillion in Social Security trust funds to other purposes."
Right? And in all fairness, both parties, presidents of both parties and Congress have been doing this.
Oh, absolutely. But it was Al Gore who was coming along saying, "Let's stop doing this."
Right. But even more
and
recently,
Bush agreed with him.
Even more recently, and it was probably just a slip of the tongue or maybe a slip of truth, but this business about we can't win the war on terror. Now, I would agree in a sense that talking about winning a war on terror is like talking about winning a war against disease or death or poverty. No, you're never going to win it. But, you know, again, if that kind of comment had been made by a Democratic candidate for president, you know, the Republicans would be all over him.
Yeah, it had actually, a comment similar to that had been made by a Democratic congressman about 3 weeks earlier, and Tom DeLay absolutely took him to task on the floor of the House, called him everything but a traitor, said he was giving aid and comfort to the enemy, or implied that. It just ripped him up one side and down the other, and then George Bush comes along and says the same thing, and of course the next day they're spinning it. You know,
just one last comment about the hatred, supposedly, that Democrats have for Bush.
Yeah.
Have they forgotten the 8-year campaign that, whether they personally hated Clinton or not, the unrelenting campaign against not only Clinton's policies but against his person, his character, just went on for 8 years.
And his wife.
And by supposedly religious people, you know, Christians who are supposed to forgive people their sins, but it went on and on for 8 years, and now we're just supposed to think that that Bush is the second coming, I guess.
Yeah. Well, these guys are reading a different Bible than the one that
I think so.
Read. Yeah. Rick, thanks for the call.
Have a good weekend.
Good to hear from you. Yeah, you too. Have a great weekend. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Another flip-flop. Patients write to sue. Governor Bush vetoes, this is in Salon on February 7th of 01, vetoes the patient's right to sue. Despite his campaign rhetoric in favor of a patient's bill of rights, Bush fought such a bill tooth and nail as Texas governor, vetoing a bill co-authored by Republican State Representative John Smithy in 1995. He consistently opposed a patient's right to sue and HMO over coverage denials that resulted in adverse health effects. In other words, even if your HMO makes decisions that cause you to get sick, and they do it just to save money, you shouldn't have the right to sue. This was George Bush's position in 1995. Then in 2000, when he was running for president, he said, and I quote, this is a verbatim quote from George W. Bush, "We're one of the first states," Texas he's talking about, "that said you can sue an HMO for denying you proper coverage. It's time for our nation to come together and do what's right for the people, and I think this is right for the people. You know, I support a national patient's bill of right, Mr. Vice President." This was in the debate with Al Gore. "And I want all people covered. I don't want the law to supersede good law like we've got in Texas," end quote. All right, so he's now in favor of the law that he fought in Texas. And then we come back. Now he's flip-flopped back again. April 5th of this year, this from the Washington Post, "To let two Texas consumers, Juan Davila and Ruby R. Collad, sue their managed care companies for wrongful denials of medical benefits," quote, "would be to completely undermine federal law regarding employee benefits," end quote, Assistant Solicitor General James A. Feldman said in oral arguments March 23rd, this is in court. "Moreover, the administration's brief attacked the policy rationale for Texas's law, which is similar to statutes on the books in nine other states." The Bush administration now officially against a patient's right to sue. And we're wondering, who's the flip-flopper here? John in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I was going to comment on something else.
Well, okay, go for it. It's Friday. Anything you want.
Well, I was just disappointed with Kerry. I don't know. It seemed like going to Nantucket, I've seen a number of pictures in the newspaper here. Look, for instance, the Midnight Rally story last night was buried in the A section of the Inquirer, but the picture above it was
windsurfing.
No, he wasn't windsurfing. He was on this boat.
At least Jack Kennedy
smiling, waving to the photographer, and
yeah. At least Jack Kennedy had the good sense to play football.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm serious. I mean, you want to run for president of the United States, you don't want to be doing elitist stuff.
Exactly.
Know,
yeah.
Whoever's advising Kerry should have their butt kicked.
I agree, and I don't know. This was a bad convention. It was a scary convention to watch, and I just hope Kerry gets some fighting spirit. I mean, he seemed to display that some at his at his convention speech.
Yeah.
I thought if he can maintain this energy and this.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. May the best man win. John, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Here they come again. Catch us if you can.
We'll catch George Bush at another flip-flop. Here's number 3. I got a list of 29 of them here. No way we'll get through this today. Bush supports current tobacco farmers' quota system. On May of this year, he said, they got a quota system in place, the allotment system, and I don't think it needs to be changed. 6 weeks later, quote, this administration is open to a buyout. In other words, changing it. We'll get to flip-flop number 4. It has to do with North Korea in just a moment. Let's take a few calls, though. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ken in Fraser, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I just want to say I love your show, and I just finished your last hours of Ancient Sunlight, and I'm moving through the Prophet's Way. Mm-hmm. It has made a profound impact on my life. But there's a question I have for you is how you pronounce something that your friend,
Herr Mueller
told you, and that's this word, and I'm going to say it wrong, and I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Barmherzigkeit?
Yeah, Barmherzig. Barmherzigkeit.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't pronounce it particularly well either. There's a few German words, or there's a lot of German, like the one for squirrel, Eichhörnchen, that I just can't say. I can't come close to saying it. But Barmherzigkeit is, compassion, but it's compassion beyond the words that we would normally use in English. Herr Mueller, by the way, is 92 years old. He's still alive.
I was wondering. I'm on page 263 now, and it's almost just a few more chapters, and I was wondering if anything like that, it hadn't come up in the last book, and it wasn't in this one.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. No, he's still around. He's in fact, for the last couple of years, we had an annual event over in Germany where people would come over and get together with him. This last year, we didn't do it. I think the last year was last year because he's just... he's 92. You know, it's getting difficult for him.
Well, I highly recommend people to read the story because it's an incredible story.
Well, thank you.
It's mostly a story about him. I can't tell you enough. I'm hoping to see you in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Great.
But
we're gonna have fun there.
I think about this that word. I wanted to know how to say the word because I think about that. It's a small doing small acts of compassion, kindness.
Yeah.
Every day now.
Barmherzigkeit.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you.
Okay, good luck. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston.
Hi, Tom. You had an earlier caller who was curious about the late-term abortion vote that Kerry and Edwards had not voted on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading a book called The War on Choice by Gloria Felt, the president of Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm learning is that... Republicans sometimes are playing games with these votes. They'll put forward a bill that they know the Democrats cannot abide by. For instance, if they had voted yes on banning certain procedures, they'd be threatening the lives of women.
Right.
So, and they try to put them in these positions where they, can go to their constituents and say, look, these people don't care about babies' lives, when in fact... It's Democratic policies of supporting sex ed and access to birth control and support for women and child care subsidies that end up reducing the number of unintended pregnancies. And
yeah, which then reduces the number of abortions. I mean,
exactly.
It's very straightforward. But see, the problem is, number one, you've identified absolutely the political side of it. They'll put a bill forward, for example, this most recent one about the so-called partial birth abortion, where even if the woman is going to die, you can't abort the fetus, right?
Yep.
It's on its surface patently ridiculous. But beyond that, you've got really the agenda behind the agenda is that a lot of these folks are coming out of a place, many of them Catholic, but it's not just confined to the Catholics, where ultimately what they want to ban is birth control. They want to go back to pre-1954, Griswold versus State of Connecticut, where it was illegal. It was a felony in Connecticut, and it was in many states, for people to, no, 64 was, I believe it was, to have, for a married couple, to have birth control devices in their homes, condoms and things. And this is what they want to go back to because of their religious beliefs. They believe that birth control is wrong. And that's the road they're traveling down. Preston, thanks for the call.
Thank
good
you.
To hear from you.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got?
Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kevo and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man. Tonight at 8, 7 central. Only on A&E.
She's the one. The chosen.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years, with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the predictable outcome, Pfizer, this from CNN's Money Report, 536,000 low-income seniors will lose access to discounted drugs. Isn't privatization wonderful? This whole con idea of, we need to provide, make sure that people have access to good prices on prescription drugs, and so we're gonna leave it up to the big drug companies. They will behave benevolently, won't they? Here's the story from CNN, and I'll just read it straight. Pfizer, the nation's largest pharmaceutical company, has ended its widely used discount card for the elderly, according to a newspaper report Wednesday. The action left 536,000 low-income Medicare beneficiaries without access to discounts on popular medicines, according to the New York Times. The newspaper said that under the former Pfizer card, a 30-day supply of the popular cholesterol treatment Lipitor had cost $15 compared with $68 at one internet pharmacy or $43.32 at one Canadian website. Pfizer said it had warned cardholders for months that it was going to discontinue the card program on August 31st and encouraged them to sign up for other discount cards available under a new Medicare program that began in June, reported the Times. But consumer advocates said the new program was so confusing that it had asked Pfizer to keep its discount card until 2006, when prescription drugs become a standard part of Medicare benefits, said the newspaper. But Pfizer apparently has said to senior citizens,
on your own, buddy.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to call on any topic at all. It's Friday afternoon, last half hour of the third hour of our program. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Hey, where in New Jersey are you, Brian? Oops, let me turn you on here. Let me turn you up. There you go. Brian, now you're on.
Hey, I'm about 10 minutes outside of Philly. I actually visited Vermont this weekend, and now I know why you live up there, because it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is.
But I wanted to comment on Richard Gephardt's speech the other night, and I'm a little upset about what he said here.
Richard Gephardt?
I'm sorry. Well, Dick Gephardt, right?
You mean Dick Cheney?
You know what? I'm totally off. George Pataki is who I meant.
George Pataki, okay.
Now I'm losing my mind here.
I just didn't remember Dick Gephardt having given a speech. I watched
too many... Too much of those Republicans, and they fried my brain.
There you go. Sometimes, Brian, you just have to say no, you know.
the two comments that he made that just really made my blood pressure rise, and I'm only 23, so that's hard to do, is the first thing he said was this candidate has to Google his own name to find out where he stands, whereas I don't... I mean, they keep saying...
He was referring to Kerry, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he talks about the Clinton administration, about... how they attacked the World Trade Center, the USS Cole, hundreds in dead, and they didn't do anything. And, you know, al-Qaeda didn't count on George W. Bush to do this. But I think you've said it before that al-Qaeda kind of wanted George W. Bush to do this because look at how many people they're recruiting right now.
Yeah.
And that just totally upset me.
Oh, yeah. we have just played right into their hands. It is so sad. Had we mobilized, when the entire world was with us, the day after 9/11, had we gone out and said to the world, we have a cancer, a cultural cancer among the human race, and you know it's using Islam, and Islam should be insulted by that, and I think was, frankly, I mean many of the Muslim countries were in Tehran, they were candlelight vigils on behalf of Americans who died in 9/11.
Right.
And had we said, you know, there is this cancer, there is this sickness, there are these criminals, they're criminals. If we had treated Osama bin Laden the same way we treated Tim McVeigh, who did essentially the same thing, the order of magnitude was about 10-1 larger, but that was pretty shocking when Tim McVeigh did that. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, the whole country was in shock. If we had treated bin Laden the same way we treated Tim McVeigh, we would have the same result. And that is that, you know, you put the criminals away and everybody's going, gee, that wasn't such a good idea, was it? What McVeigh wanted to happen is exactly what bin Laden wanted to happen. Tim McVeigh had read a book called The Turner Diaries. And in the Turner Diaries, it's an apocalyptic novel in which a group of right-wing, white, Protestant, gun-owning, anti-Semitic, on and on, right? A bunch of these guys decide that they're going to provoke the government to over-respond, to hyper-respond, and they blow up a federal building in the Turner Diaries, in the book. And the government declares a war on them.
Right.
Right, in the book, in the novel. And, you know, demonizes them and says, okay, that's it, you know, and starts pulling in the guns, everybody's guns, says everybody has to turn in their guns. And this, of course, causes all the white Protestant Christian gun owners, to stand up and revolt. That's right. And they end up, and by the end of the novel, as I recall, I actually, when this thing happened, went out and got a copy of it and read it, read most of it, actually. I skipped around a few pieces because at times it would get really tedious, you know. But in any case, at the end of the story, basically the only people left standing were the, you know, I mean, it was Hitler's vision. The only people left standing were the white Protestant Christians,
right.
And they had taken back the nation. Well, that was what Tim McVeigh really thought would happen. I mean, he was willing to die, and he did. He was willing to die for his vision of taking back America, and just like the these crazy Muslims were willing to die for their vision of spreading their particular theology. I mean, it is a theology associated with politics, and you know, our response to McVeigh just completely took the steam out of it. The white power right wing loony fringe bunch did not get the juice that, you know, McVeigh and the Turner Diary folks all thought that they were going to get. You know, all these guys in Montana, you know, these survivalists and whatnot, they're all, you know, getting ready for the war. And didn't happen because Bill Clinton said, hey, this guy's a criminal.
Yeah, we responded correctly to it, radically, with attacking the wrong country. So.
Well, there's that, too. But, I mean, even the way that we went into Afghanistan, I think, was inappropriate.
We could have done it much more effectively, much more strategically, much more rapidly, and much more effectively.
I don't understand how 15 out of the 19 hijackers are from Saudi Arabia, and yet we still are doing plenty of business with them. And Bush said that last night that Afghanistan was free.
Yeah, yeah. When Karzai controls two cities. Whoa, Brian, we lost you there. Karzai controls two cities in Afghanistan, Kabul, and I forget the other one. And yes, actually, 10 million people have registered to vote, most of them at the demand, very often because their lives will be forfeit if they don't, of the warlords. There's this big competition going on among the warlords over who's going to control the opium crop. And you think this is a free and open election? I have a bridge to sell you. Let's move along here with the George Bush flip-flops of the day. North Korea, this is one of the more unfortunate ones. George Bush in 2002, November 15th of 2002, said, and this off the White House website, we developed a bold approach under which if the North addressed our longstanding concerns, this being the North Koreans, the United States was prepared to take important steps that would have significantly improved the lives of the North Korean people. Now that North Korea's covert nuclear weapons program has come to light, we are unable to pursue this approach. Okay. Then, on June of 2004, just a few months ago, the Bush administration, see, basically they said, you know, now that they're doing their weapons, we're not going to offer them anything, right? We're not going to bribe them. We're not going to cooperate with them. We're not going to help them out in any way. And now here we have Scotty McClellan on June 23rd articulating the new administration positions. Well, we will work to make steps to ease their political and economic isolation, so there will be what you would see would be some provisional or temporary proposals that would only lead to lasting benefit after North Korea dismantles its nuclear program. So there would be some provisional or temporary efforts of that nature. And on it goes. Bush ignoring the issues. I thought this was an interesting piece in today's paper that in fact it was actually quite well said by Ron Fournier of the Associated Press. An unpopular war and 1.1 million lost jobs is enough to kill a presidency. So President Bush tried Thursday night to make the election about something else, himself and his leadership style. That's pretty remarkable. Well, it's an analysis, AP. Even when we don't agree, he told an anxious and divided nation, you know what I believe and where I stand. Well, it turns out, I got this list of 29 flip-flops. It's not altogether true. But as Fournier points out, he sought to make a virtue of his differences with half or more of the electorate and cast Democratic rival John Kerry as an indecisive liberal unfit for wartime leadership. And he goes through this. He says, Do I forget the lessons of September 11th and take the word of a madman? He's talking about the decision to invade Iraq. And this is just a classic example of what's called the false argument. The false argument. The false polarity. George Bush, in his speech, said, he's talking about 9/11 and why he had to go to war on 9/11. Not 9/11. See, they've done it to me. They've done it to me. My friends, this is how effective their psychological warfare is. We're talking about the invasion of Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11. It has nothing to do with the war on terrorism. There was maybe one terrorist in Iraq. One guy. I mean, there's entire countries that are full. But anyway, George Bush says, do I forget the lessons of September 11 and take the word of a madman? See, this is Frank Luntz framing thing so effectively done. Merge in the public's mind 9/11 in Iraq, even though there is no merger. George Bush says, do I forget the lessons of September 11 and take the word of a madman, or do I take actions to defend our country? As if those are the only two choices. What about the third choice that the entire world was suggesting
And many, and actually, according to the polls, the majority of Americans were suggesting before we actually commenced the war in Iraq, and that is, keep the weapons inspectors in there and figure out whether or not this guy's a threat. Well, Bush says, Bush didn't want to raise that, so he says, do I forget the lessons of 9/11 and take the word of a madman, or do I take actions to defend our country? Faced with that choice, I will defend America every time. Well, you know, gee, if that was the choice, but that wasn't the choice. And this use of language is extremely sophisticated. And Fournier says, the idea is to make people afraid to change even as they are craving it. I would say that the main message of the Republican National Convention, and I heard, I was there for 3 of the 4 days, and heard most of it. The main message was, vote for George Bush or die. If you don't vote for George Bush, they're going to come to your home, drag you out by the hair, hack you up, kill your kids, rape your dog. You know, it's that's it. Vote for George Bush or or we're going down. That's their message. Vote for Bush or die. And another false choice. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. And Ricky in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry I didn't get to meet with you while you were here, but I was out of town at that time.
Oh, I'm sorry we missed each other.
Yeah, I'm real confused on these national job numbers. You know, I was tracking them pretty closely, and we were at like 3.5 million jobs lost overall, and 2.7 lost in manufacturing. And then the following month, we had this gain of 300,000 jobs, and then we had some other gains of like 180,000 and 110,000. And then suddenly, this information came forward that the normal U.S. economy, it needs like 150,000 jobs just to keep pace with all the new people entering the workforce.
Right.
So that means like for 36 months of the Bush presidency, that would translate to like 5.4 million jobs deficit.
If
you added the 3.5 million loss to it, you'd get like a 8.9 million job deficit situation.
Yeah, there's been a couple of months where he was over 150,000, but two or three. But
now they're talking that there's only 1.1 million jobs lost by Bush. You know, when did these other 7.8 million jobs get created?
Well, they didn't, Enrique. You know, what's happening is that when people have been on unemployment, when their unemployment benefits run out, essentially, I mean, you know, to boil it down and oversimplify it, but nonetheless, it's basically the situation. When their unemployment benefits run out, they're no longer counted as unemployed.
Yeah, so they enter the workforce again, even though they don't have a job? Or
well, no, they're not entering the workforce. They're no longer in the workforce, and they're no longer unemployed.
So you just subtract from the total.
That's right.
So they're playing.
They're playing games with numbers.
These numbers, yeah.
Yep.
And how come no one challenges them on it?
Well, in part, a lot of these changes were made. For example, there used to be a statistic called the mass layoffs report that was issued every quarter by the, I believe it was the Labor Department. It might have been the Commerce Department. And under the Bush senior administration, they stopped issuing that report. They just again stopped issuing that report under Bush Jr. It's basically if numbers look bad, then you know they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to show those numbers. And we've seen also the job numbers revised downward now. You know, the last 3 months, I think 2 out of the last 3 months, they had to look back a month or two and say, you know, we said it was 120,000, but oops, it was actually only 50 or whatever. You know, whatever the numbers are. So now that we've got this 140,000 that came out today, which is less than the number we need, as you pointed out. And my guess is that'll be revised downward, too, after the election. We'll be back.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves.
I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Tom Hartmann will be joining the exceptional faculty of the Great Rethinking, the Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartmann in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartmann September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
I'm Sarah Turner, and this is a WIN feature story. It's day 3 of a 5-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increased by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Our members understand that they're not only standing up just for themselves, but they're standing up really for the affordable health care that everybody deserves. That in this country, unless we're going to be standing up for this, we're not going to see any change. So that we hope that our actions not only result in a good contract that we can all feel good about, the employer and the workers, but we also hope that this is going to be drawing attention to this issue so that we can have our elected officials be more responsive to this and to get us a good health care plan in this state and in this country.
No further talks are scheduled with a federal mediator. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back.
it's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real.
Democracy is coming, Leonard Cohen tells us.
Tom Hartman here with you.
Oh, I love this song. This is so good. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. But it's the end of the week. It's the end of the day, the end of our program here. I want to close out here with a clip from John Kerry talking about one of the big con talking points. And everybody nods their head like a bobblehead, right? Is the government doesn't make jobs. And first of all, it's not true because the government employs somewhere in the neighborhood of a quarter of all employees in the United States. Police, fire, people who work in all different dimensions of government. I mean, it's really a rather startling percentage. About a quarter of the people in the United States either work directly or indirectly for the government. They work for agencies that are funded with government funds. And so, number one, so the government can create jobs, as Roosevelt proved with the WPA. The second is that the government can create jobs by controlling the rules of the game of business. And here's John Kerry talking about that very articulately.
I've met workers out here in Ohio who've not only lost their jobs and watched them go overseas, but who actually had to unbolt the equipment that they worked on and put in a crate and send it to follow the job that went overseas. You didn't hear anything about that tonight, but let me tell you something. When John Edwards and I get in there with your help, we're going to take that tax code that you're paying for, and we're going to change what they're supporting and encouraging, which is asking you to actually reward those companies that take the jobs overseas. When John Edwards and I are in there, we're not only not going to reward the companies that take the jobs overseas, we're going to close that loophole. No American worker will ever be asked to subsidize the loss of their own job.
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, see, this is how it works. The system does influence jobs. He had one other point to make.
You know what else we're going to do? We're going to do something that makes common sense, which is what we need to restore to the main street of America. We're going to actually take the money that now goes to the companies that go overseas, and we're going to reward the companies that create the manufacturing jobs right here in the United States of America.
And there you go. I mean, it's common sense. Common sense! What a radical idea in American politics! Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Ira Grad for engineering our program today. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to Ben Birch and Michael Toth for our archives at White Rose Society and on TomHartman.com. To Jay for our music. To the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. See you next week. See you next Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is